Today on Vox Talks Economics, global supply chains, what we know and what we really need to know. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well.
The modern supply chain is snapping. The coronavirus exposes the fragility of an economy built on outsourcing and just-in-time inventory.
Well, that's the headline of a March 2020 article in The Atlantic. 2 years on, the modern supply chain hasn't snapped. But everyone is now aware that global supply chains alone cannot guarantee food in supermarkets or PPE in hospitals. A new paper examines how risky these supply chains really are and what we could do to shore them up. Richard Baldwin of the Graduate Institute and, of course, of the CPR. And you notice also my helper here on the voiceover is one of the authors, and he joins me now. Richard, welcome back.
It's great to be back, Tim. Thank you for having me.
That headline, was it accurate in one way? Did COVID expose global supply chain fragility, vulnerability that we just didn't know about?
Well, yes and no. So I think it took everybody by surprise, those stockouts and delays and all that sort of thing. The question is whether we didn't know about it or not. And I think the way to think about that is that basically this was a shock that we had never prepared for before. So there is an entire profession of people, logistics and supply chain management people, who study shocks, who understand bottlenecks. They are prepared for this. But this hit the whole world at the same time and shifted demand patterns in ways that we hadn't expected before. So I think mostly what it is that we discovered we were vulnerable to shocks that we never really anticipated would come. So what was new was the shock. And because the shocks weren't new, we didn't realize we had this fragility. So that's the way I would put it.
Was it also that there was a change in the nature of global supply chains in the years leading up to COVID-19? For example, the just-in-time optimization, did that magnify the COVID shock? Or are we saying the COVID shock was so huge that this disruption would have happened anyway?
It definitely magnified it. I would just back up a little bit, as this thing's been going on for 25 or 30 years.
Yes.
In the run-up to COVID, the smooth functioning of the world trading system, the relative peace and stability meant companies were optimizing by cutting costs and cutting costs by locating production where the costs were lowest, keeping inventories low, because things had been running so smoothly. And of course, there was always the odd flooding here or hurricane there or labor strike. And they had designed the systems to be robust or at least resilient to those kinds of things. But it really was this different shock. But clearly, if we hadn't done all this global value chain optimization, just in time in particular, it would have been not as bad. And let me hasten to say that there's a bunch of countries, Switzerland is one of them where I live, who have a systematic national policy of stockholding. So it's not the companies who hold the extra stock, it's the government who pays essentially retailers and wholesalers to keep a bit of extra stock just in case. It wasn't completely unexpected, but that just in time did matter.
Very interesting. I had no idea that Switzerland had that kind of policy. No one mentions it during normal times, do they?
Yeah, well, most of the houses have assault rifles in there as well. They're all militia army. Not many everybody knows that either. So it's an unusual country.
Probably that's not a policy proposal that we could implement everywhere.
No.
Now, but we have to think about what we should do in the future, don't we? And one idea in response to what's happened with global supply chains suggests that we should diversify them, and not least to reduce the reliance on China. Is this a good solution to the problem?
It's not a solution, but I think one of the things that we did discover with this kind of x-ray that COVID shot is that the whole world, all manufacturing sectors all around the world are more reliant on China than is expected. And some research I've done with Rebecca Friedman in a Bank of England working paper, which is also a CPR working paper, we show that people are far more reliant on China than the standard measures indicate. So reducing reliance on China is probably a no-brainer. China plus one is a classic one. But in any case, you know, keeping all your eggs in one basket is just not a good idea, no matter what that basket is. And China in particular is a very difficult basket right now because of the U.S.-China tensions, could potentially lead to a whole different type of systemic shocks And by systemic, I mean across the sectors for longish period of time, not totally anticipated due to geostrategic political things. And then, of course, there's climate change coming down the way. So yes, diversifying is a good thing, and probably that's already going on, but it won't solve the problem completely. This is like diversifying your portfolio. It doesn't eliminate variance, it just reduces it.
The other big policy idea that's been floated is the retreat from globalization, dismantling and reshoring some of these global supply chains. Is that a better idea?
No, it's a terrible idea. So where it's been tried, it hasn't worked very well. Let's say, for example, masks right now. The U.S. made an enormous effort to boost domestic production of masks for COVID to reduce the reliance on China, among other things. And now they have these high-priced masks that nobody wants to buy. And the hospitals have all gone back to buying the cheap masks because they're available. Government-led ideas like that done in an emergency rarely work out. Now, I think there's a more general trend driven by technology to nearshore, reshore some of the value added in manufacturing because it's so automated, the labor cost differences aren't so important. But that's not really about shocks. It's really about a change in technology. So in any case, the way I see it, I see very little reshoring of global value chains, except in a very few specific industries, farming, banking, and the military, as examples of industries where governments take very expensive, very systematic policies to insulate against shocks.
So these particular industries, are you saying that they've done a particularly good job, or are they an example to how other industries could cope with this?
The reason I chose those industries where there's a very clear, widely recognized divergence between the public evaluation of the uncertainty and the shocks and the private evaluation. So you take farming, for example, everywhere in the world, you have massively expensive, intrusive policies to make sure more food is grown at home than otherwise would have been the case, or stock holding or controlling prices or whatever. And the reason was because farmers don't look after famine, but famine has huge social consequences. So we have a situation where the farmers know all about risk, but they don't have the proper incentive to look after the well-being of the whole population, each and every farmer. So there, the government has to do something to do that. And most of the policies around the world involve some reshoring of production or subsidization of domestic production of food, for example. The other one is finance. Again, it's widely recognized that the banks care less about risk than the society as a whole because they don't suffer the consequences directly of the entire social cost of big shocks. And so the government has very extensive regulation, surveillance, and enforcement in order to make them more conservative in their risk holding. And so every country which has the capacity to do that does regulate that because of the divergence. And the last one is the military, which is classic with its demand shocks. Most of the time, you do not need military defense services, but when you need them, you absolutely need them right now and lots of them. So the only way to do that is to essentially nationalize the production of defense services. So countries all around the world have armies that they keep most of the time completely idle, kind of an ultimate domestic nationalization of production capacity in order to maintain capacity for demand shocks going forward. So those are the sort of three models. It's basically subsidizing domestic production, regulations of risks which force companies to do things that are expensive, or nationalized production. And I think in things like medical supplies, at least in some of them, there's come to be a realization that maybe that's a little bit more like the food issue, where, you know, having some medical supply at home is probably a good idea, even if it's expensive. And some of the other ones, like the stockholding aspect of the military stockholding, I think that's also something that's coming along. Those are the three basic policy responses that you see. Most of the industries, the divergence between the public and private evaluation of risk isn't really large enough to justify these expensive, long-term, intrusive policies by governments.
Does the day-to-day management and de-risking of supply chains at the moment, does that match what trade economists are recommending they should do?
Well, the funny thing is trade economists completely forgot about the risk. So if you look at the literature, there's literally not a single analytic framework that looks at risk in GVCs, not a single
really?
One. Now, in the management literature and the logistics literature, it's quite extensive, but the economists, not just trade economists, but economists full stop, have really completely ignored this sort of thing. And that I'm sure is something that's going to be a booming area going forward. So it's not the economists talking about it, but I don't think economists are giving great recommendations except to say, be careful what you wish for. If everybody invests in semiconductors at the same time, we're going to have gluts in semiconductors. So that's one of the warnings, but I don't think economists are giving very clear steers on this because there's been very little research on it.
Well, let's put this to the test for you. What do you think that firms and governments should be doing in the near future to de-risk global supply chains?
So I think the first step is to identify the industries where there's this big wedge between the public and private cost of risk. I think medical supplies, in particular pharmaceuticals, in particular vaccine capacity, might be one of these things where it is really worthwhile having an expensive national policy that promotes some domestic production. But in today's world, it probably should have alliances and cooperations among groups of countries rather than each and everyone having to have entire kit themselves, but to have, you know, agreements with people. Medical supplies and pharmaceuticals probably going to be one of the ones where I think they do spend it and they do keep it up long enough to actually influence the location of production. And that I think they probably should do, because I think it's a lot more like famine. These shocks, these medical shocks, are a lot more like famine than they are running out of toilet paper or something. Mm-hmm. The other one is potentially that I can see building momentum is semiconductors. And both Europe, US, and Japan are doing something about moving semiconductors. And this one in particular is, my guess is it's worthwhile doing, because as you may or may not know, the most high-end chips of the world are only made in one place in the entire world by one company, and that's located in Taiwan, which is perhaps one of the least stable places in
yes.
the entire world right now. So diversifying that production from over-reliance on one supplier is probably a good idea. And even if there's a glut of chips, what we found out with the shock to chips was partly triggered by the U.S.-China tensions, that it really has huge knock-on. It's complementary to so much of the industry that it might be worthwhile producing a little bit too much in a few years so that you have enough in all the years. So in essence, again, going towards this food model where you're encouraging production domestically, even when you know it may not be commercially viable, it may be expensive, and you may have to keep it up for a long time, but you may be happy when things go bad.
We're regularly featuring trade economics these days on Vox Talks, with yourself and Chad Bown and Beata Jaworczyk and Simon Evanet, of course. So it shows that there is a lot to talk about at the moment. There's a lot to discuss. Are there also big gaps in our knowledge? Should there be more research into what's going on here?
Absolutely. So there's a very good McKinsey Global Institute report about supply mm-hmm. chains, and they interviewed a lot of large multinational corporations. And so these are the most sophisticated supply chain managers in the world. And they found that most of them knew their first tier suppliers, in other words, the ones they're buying parts from, and their second tier suppliers, which is the parts sold to their parts suppliers. But mm-hmm. beyond that, they had no idea what was going on.
Ah.
So they didn't even know what risks they were exposed to. And that's, I think, where we need to get more information. And there, the no regrets policy is trying to increase, as a public good, information as to what the supply chain actually looks like and where their dependencies actually lie. So that, I think, is going to go forward. And with my co-author, Rebecca Friedman, who's at the Bank of England, they're thinking about things like stress testing industries, just like you do with a bank. You say, well, what happens if the interest rate goes up and economy goes down? What happens to your portfolio? Here, you can do stress testing on supply chains to reveal vulnerabilities and gather information. So I think the information gathering is important and probably will be done a lot more. And it could be shared, you know. It's a little bit like weather buoys. It's good to know exactly what's happening everywhere, and you know that it's reliable information and you get it in real time. And, you know, setting up information systems like that would be very, very useful. And researching is, like I said, in this management literature, they've looked at whether you should own them, whether you should have lots of different suppliers. So they look at many different things. That definitely needs more research, because it's a classic economic question, which is, what is the trade-off between sacrificing the gains from sourcing everything from the cheapest against the gains that you get from reduced volatility? And those mm-hmm. kinds of trade-offs, which are sophisticated and they depend upon all sorts of things, those really do need to be researched more.
There is clearly a lot to do, and it's fascinating to find out just how much there is to know in trade economics and how important it is to the way we live today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The paper is called Risks and Global Supply Chains, What We Know and What We Need to Know. We need to know quite a lot, apparently. It is discussion paper 16672 at CEPR, and the authors Richard Baldwin and Rebecca Freeman. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. You want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now? Listen to Vox Talks Economics today. And when you subscribe, you'll find, well, it's almost 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you like, not just trade, we have everything. There's a Vox Talk waiting for you.